He drew her blaster.
Nobody can fix that kind of wound. These horses are cripples. They'll never walk again.
Stinking bastards.
JB leveled his Uzi. The armorer fired single shots, putting the crippled animals out of their misery.
Done. Let's get the hell out of here.
Gladly, sir.
Doc wiped some splashed blood off his cheek. Holding a candle high, Ryan inspected some shelves. Aside from empty shoeboxes and wire coat hangers, there was nothing.
Damn. Find any of our packs anywhere while you were searching?
Making sure the horses were dead, Mildred stood.
Not a thing. Just garbage and cobwebs.
Great. No horses, no food, only the ammo in our pockets. Ugh! Maybe we should just head for the nearest redoubt and jump out of here. We're not going to take the blues with what we have.
Maybe.
Ryan walked toward the door. In the corridor, he turned, a new expression on his face.
Jack, in the parking lot, you took a while to decide coming here. Why?
Odd tracks. Horses here, greenies elsewhere. We want horses. Came here.
But they obviously took the saddles and backpacks someplace else.
Looks like.
Which means there are possibly a lot more of them.
Doc gestured grandly at the armory.
This degenerate abattoir is merely their kitchen, for lack of a better word.
We find their nest, we find our packs. The ruins aren't very big, but it'll only take us a few hours to wreck.
Agreed. Let's go get those supplies back.
Hidden in the shadows, a greenie watched the norms below from behind the sheet of mirrored glass in the tall building. He made fists, and the knuckle thorns slid in and out as he debated attacking them now or waiting until they met the master and were helpless. The choice was clear, and the symbiont left the room to gather more of his leafy brethren. Soon, oh so very soon, the feasting would begin. Returning outside, Jack found the trail in the parking lot and started toward the ruins with the companions close behind. The moon was descending toward a bank of clouds, signaling the end of night. Soon, Ryan and the others would be visible. The square foundations of homes and stores lined the streets in an orderly procession, most of the holes filled with debris, sand, and weeds. Rubble was everywhere underfoot, along with bits of rusting machinery and a dusting of sand. In another 100 years, the desert would claim the pre-dark city, eventually swallowing the monoliths under wind-blown drifts. Already, the windows facing windward were frosted white from the constant bombardment of the hard particles. Intent on the trail, Jack darted past a manhole, missing its cover. Ryan knew that the lid had been probably taken for the iron. Manhole covers made good armor for war wags, or folks could melt them down for horseshoes, or even nails. As a child, Ryan remembered finding a lot more of the smaller items from similar pre-dark ruins. But now, the buildings were getting picked clean, and people were turning to making things once more. Doc considered that a step toward rebuilding civilization, but Ryan wasn't sure. The first things most folks made were blasters and gallows. Stopping at an intersection, Jack went down on a knee to study the ground closely, his fingers hovering above the pavement. A bug was crushed at one point, and a stone overturned, its wet side now facing the nighttime sky.
Trouble?
Ryan could tell somebody had passed by very recently, but not how many or where they were headed. Jack's expertise was tracking.
No prob.
The teenager started to move about in an ever-expanding spiral. Frowning, he finally stood. Jack pointed toward particular buildings.
Two groups. One there, other there.
Hotel and the sports arena. Any difference in the depths? The muties carrying the supplies should leave a deeper print.
None. Maybe share all.
Or thrown it away. We better move fast or we'll be feasting on horse steak for the next week.
Okay, we split into two teams. Christy, Jack, and I will check the arena. You folks hit the hotel. Good or bad, we rendezvous at the insurance company here in 30 minutes. If the other team hasn't arrived, go find them.
JB looked at his wrist chron.
30 and counting. Check.
Without further comment, Ryan and the others headed toward the arena. Unfolding the wire stock of his Uzi, JB took the point for his group and started toward the hotel. The main building was a mirrored glass cylinder, and it was impossible to see if there were any lights or movements in the upper stories. On street level, two low wings stood on either side. Mildred stepped over a bent drive shaft that was brown with rust.
Swimming pool and restaurant if this hotel follows the usual style.
No tracks that I can see.
Nor I.
Doc slid the selector on his blaster from the 63 caliber smoothbore to the 44 caliber revolver. Against the resilient greenies, the buckshot charge would do scant damage, but the solid lead mini-balls would and could remove heads with the precision of a cannon. The windows lining the east wing were gone, wind-blown sand filling the pool nearly to the top. Swinging around the hotel, they found the restaurant to be in a similar condition, broken and deserted. A lizard darted from the shadows and disappeared into the soft sand as if it were water. Not a trace remained of its passage. J.B. straightened his fedora and pulled on his fingerless gloves tighter.
We go in. Remember, go for headshots, just like Stickies.
Nobody replied, but they raised the sights of their blasters higher. Under a crumbling overhang, a rusted sign squeaked as it swung back and forth from the gentle wind. Mildred stopped it with her hand, then laid it down flat. Now that they could hear, there was only the soft moan of the desert wind and the patter of sand hitting glass. Proceeding in silence, they found the lobby of the hotel dark and smelling of mildew. The front counter sagged in the middle, and a shoeshine stand was alive with busy termites. The floor was bare concrete, pronged strips at the bottom of the walls, showing the floor had once been carpeted.
Damn, we could track them easy on carpeting.
J.B. lit a candle. The tiny flame illuminated only a few yards, but it was better than nothing.
There's an interesting fact I learned on my junkets.
The physician was holding her own candle high to inspect the ceiling. The tiles were in place, with no indications of bullet holes or accumulated residue from other candles or torches.
In my day, nobody wanted to stay on the 13th floor of a skyscraper. Supposed to be bad luck. So the hotel people use the 13th floor for themselves as offices and storage. Often, the elevators don't even list it as existing, but we could get there by taking the surface stairs. Surface elevator, too, but without power, those are dead.
20 stories.
J.B. looked behind the counter. Piles of key cards lay on the floor, along with a smashed register.
13 would be a good spot for an ambush. Whether invaders started searching at the bottom or at the top, once they were higher than 13, the greenies could come boiling out and trap their prey.
So, we start there. Lead on, my friend.
Going past a line of payphones and washrooms, J.B. pushed open a swing door with the barrel of his Uzi. Stacks of chairs lined their left, wooden easels and plastic signboards to the right.
No cobwebs.
Dean scuffed the floor. Mildred reached out and lifted a green leaf off the sharp end of an easel.
I'd say we found them.
The service elevator was straight ahead, steam tables and room service carts in neat rows along a wall with faded lines painted on the floor.
Tidy folks.
J.B. panned the Uzi, sweeping for targets. Mildred nodded.
Hyatt was the best.
At a door marked service stairs, J.B. and Dean stood guard, while Mildred turned the handle and eased it open. Almost instantly, a hairy, fat spider darted around the edge and dashed onto her hand. Disgusted, the physician shook it off. The insect landed on the floor, and Doc crushed it under his boot.
Ugh, filthy things. Always did hate them, especially since our past close encounter.
As expected, the stairwell was pitch dark, but under the candles they could dimly see the stairs were marked with the prints of countless bare feet. Assuming combat formation, the companions started up the concrete stairs, watching for traps. Oddly, their footsteps didn't echo, and reaching the fourth floor, they discovered why. The stairwell ended abruptly. Nothing was above them but the empty interior of the gutted hotel, each level painstakingly removed to make the building hollow. Astonished, the companions stepped onto the carpeted floor, looking upward at 17 stories of banked windows and a very distant skylight. Vines and creepers covered the interior. Hammocks hung like nesting pods along the sides. The middle was clear all the way to the roof, the ragged ends of steel beams and rough concrete slabs marring the vertical checkerboard of mirrored glass.
Those hammocks are arranged so the greenies can catch sunlight while sleeping. They climb the vines to get to their beds.
Dean listened to the building creak faintly as it swayed in the wind.
We can't follow up there. We get halfway and snip, down we go.
I